أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا ومولانا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وأهل بيت الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين لا سيما بقية الله في الأرضين روحي وروح العالمين له الفداء رب اشرح لي صدري ويسر لي أمري واحلل عقدة من لساني يفقه قولي. So alhamdulillah, now we've gotten to the stage where Yusuf alayhi salam is in the prison, and the dua or the effort that he made to free himself, which was his responsibility, is now slowly seeming like it's going to take place. The king had a strange dream. He presented his dream, and maybe he had seen it several times. He presented it to his courtiers, to the inner circle, and they weren't able to come up with what the interpretation of the dream was. The young man, or the, I don't know if he was young or old, the guy who was serving the wine there, he heard. And he remembered that he had a wonderful friend, and his friend knew about dreams. So although it might have not been protocol, he spoke up. He said, send me, let me go talk to him, I'll bring the response back for you. So now we're at that next stage. So this is now verse number 46. Yusuf. So now he's there in the prison speaking to him. Yusuf, أيها الصديق أفتنا في سبع بقرات سمان يأكلهن سبع عجاف وسبع سنبلات خضر وأخرى يابسات لعلي أرجع إلى الناس لعلهم يعلمون. So he said, Yusuf, O truthful one, O Siddiq, give us your opinion regarding seven fat cows who are eaten by seven lean ones, and seven green ears, and several others, that I may return to the people so that they may know the truth of the matter. The Quran omits what happened next, meaning after the conversation between the person who was serving the wine and the courtiers of that inner circle with the king himself, then obviously he was given permission. But the Quran doesn't mention that. We understand that from the story, that he was given permission. Now he's there in the prison, and he's speaking to Yusuf. He addresses him, and he uses these words, Yusuf, ayyuha siddiq. Siddiq. O person who is very truthful. Siddiq doesn't just mean a person who tells the truth. This is a spiritual station. We hope that, inshallah, Allah, if He grants tawfiq, if we could be one of the people who are siddiqeen, then that would be wonderful. If we couldn't, at least be among them, be with them. Inshallah, I'll read you one of the things. So truthful people, all truthful people, people who tell the truth, are not considered siddiq. There are levels. There are other things that are there. We're going to look at some of the explanation of Allama Tabatabai to see what it is that these people are like, and hopefully we can at least strive to be like them. So some people, we call them truthful when their words, when they speak to us, they tell the truth. If I give you a promise, if I tell you I'm going to do something, if I tell you this is the situation, you know that I'm not lying to you. But there's another stage where my actions are also truthful. My actions reflect my beliefs perfectly. So my beliefs are correct, my actions, and in addition to my words, are also correct and also reflect that higher reality that I believe in without any conflict being amongst them. This is the person who is closer to being one of those people who's siddiqeen. It doesn't mean, though, that when we have instructions from Quran and Sunnah to tell the truth, that we always say all of our information. Anybody asks me any question, then I think that as a Muslim, I'm supposed to be truthful. So, you know, I'll tell you my bank account number, where I live. Right? That's not wise, and not according to instructions of Ahlul Bayt. Actually, the mu'min is also kayyis. The mu'min's clever. The mu'min's not supposed to be naive. Anybody comes in, they can take advantage of me because I'm just a simple person. I have one ruling there in Islam, and that is to tell the truth, and I act on that, whereas there's a lot of rulings in Islam. Let's look into the words of Amir al-Mu'mineen, who's definitely one of the Siddiqeen, always encouraging his followers to tell the truth. But what advice does he give to his own son? Ya Bunay. So he's speaking to his son, Ya Bunay. La taqul ma la ta'alam. Very important instructions. The first part of the statement of Amir al-Mu'mineen. If you don't have information about something, if you don't know what you're talking about, if you're not an expert in that field, don't share your opinion. You don't know something? Other people are talking about it. I'll seem small if I don't add my two cents. But I'm not an expert in this field. I don't have information in this field. I haven't studied anything. I haven't read anything. I don't have to feel obligated to speak. Until a person speaks, then their flaws aren't revealed. It's a good thing for me to be somebody who speaks less. I don't know something about a subject. I don't feel even any obligation to speak. Sometimes even if I do know something about a subject, I won't be the first one to get out, start shouting and express and let the world know that I know. The students said that sometimes, this actually is a true story, they invited Allama Tabatabai Ridwanullah Ta'ala alayh. Allama Tabatabai. And Imam Khomeini, so one clever student. I have two of these personalities here. They're so humble. They've come, for instance, I've had a dinner in my room. And now what I'm going to do is I'm going to start a discussion and watch them go at it. And he says, neither one of them. I'm trying to put the bait out there. Let me, you know, they're Allama Tabatabai. Imam Khomeini. How much knowledge does he have? They said that with Allama Tabatabai, sometimes he'd be sitting in a session and with a very loud voice. Now, this is something even for myself very difficult to say. But you would ask a question, he would say, I don't know. Allama Tabatabai would say, I don't know. Instead of me feeling, no, whatever it is, I have to answer. Whatever question you have, like Amir al-Mu'mineen, saluni qabla an tafkiduni. Any question you have, any subject, Islam, other than Islam, dunya, akhirah, ready. I don't know. And I don't feel any obligation. I don't feel less if I don't speak up about something. If it's an obligation, yes. So he says, don't say everything that you know. The first thing was that if I don't know something, I don't speak on that. I don't know what that is. The next thing he says, بَلْ لَا تَقُلْ كُلَّ مَا تَعْلَمُ. He says, even when you do know something, don't say everything that you know. Keep up some of your information to yourself. Right? Is this the time and place for saying this? Is it going to be effective now? Or should I wait and perhaps share this later? The wise person thinks carefully before they speak. They say the munafiq. And again, sometimes these traits of nifaq might be in all of us, in me. And I'm saying this hopefully as a reminder to myself and also to you. The munafiq, they say, he speaks before he thinks. The mu'min, it's much better for the mu'min to think first and then speak. Is this the time for this? Is it effective right now? Is this a fact which I should share? Or is it something that, no, right now let it pass. I'll wait a little bit. I'll find a more opportune, a better opportunity, and then I'll share my information. Sometimes that's the wise approach, especially when it comes to training others, doing Amr bil Ma'ruf to people, right? Because our brothers and sisters who are participating here in this gathering, our goal was not only to preserve our own iman, but even if we can reach out and try and help the youngsters in our community, youngsters, elders, olders, other people, we're going to try and help them. When I want to do reform of others, I have to be careful and see what the person's ready for. I want to do Amr bil Ma'ruf, Nahi na Munkar. You see me, I've got 10 flaws, 10 problems, 10 issues. Do you come over and just run a list? You know, brother, you know what you're doing? Just take out your risala. Brother, you're doing this wrong and that wrong and this wrong. By the time you get to your third or fourth thing, I'm like, brother, jazakum Allah khairan, I will talk to you later. What happens though is if I'm a bit more careful and I look at those constructions that they've given me for Amr bil Ma'ruf and Nahi al-Munkar, when I look in the risala of my marja, one of the things they tell me is about, is it going to be effective? Is this a subject? Let's say I'm doing 10 things that are wrong. If you speak to me about this one subject, these two things, yes, I'm ready to listen to you. These other two, no, I'm still too attached. I'm fixed on these two things. I haven't been able to correct those things. So then, in order to help me reform myself, you're not justifying sin. You're not saying, well, it's okay, you live your lifestyle. You're not saying that. But instead of attacking me on those things that I'm not ready to hear from you, you'll speak to me about those things that I am ready to hear from you. Because less sin is better. If a person's committing less sin, committing less wrong, that's much better than that they're committing. So when you go sometimes to the office of the marja, they tell that you go over and you see what the person's ready for. What can I say? What's most effective? What's helpful now? Sometimes I'll explain the concept and I won't identify the misdaq or the example. For instance, one of the things that I want to do to prepare the ummah for the return of the imam is to introduce to the ummah the idea that Islam has both personal laws, social laws, and political laws. And when I want to ask for the return of the imam, I'm asking for the imam to implement all of Islam. Part of that are Islam's political instructions. How do we run our government in the absence of the imam? Who is our leader, for instance? Now, one time, what you do is you come to me and you know that I have doubts about this issue. I have doubts about particular personalities. So one time, what you do is you come over and you try and beat me over the head with a certain personality, except Fulan, his wilaya, this is the issue. Another time, you say, no, the person's not ready for it. Let me start out with the concept of what Islam is, what Islam says, what Islam is about. Islam provides solutions to all of these things. You're not telling me about the person yet. You're getting my mind ready. You're seeing that I'm ready to accept the justice of Islam, for instance. If you explain to me that should it be the case that any Saddam Hussein comes and rules us, any Yazid comes and rules us, we should accept that? And I say, no, that doesn't make sense. Wouldn't it be better if we had somebody? Okay, wonderful. Then you tell me that the imam, when he couldn't come to a certain area, he would send a fallible human being like Muslim ibn Aqil to Kufa. And I'm like, yes, 100%. And then you leave it there. Jazakumullah khairan. Today's lesson is over. I don't have to. No, in every session I will prove to you, you will accept. No. That's not even my mission. God guides. And that kind of Wahhabi style approach, I'm going to get in your face, and Shias have it too. Get into your face and shout and argue and prove, especially because I can prove my arguments, right? Where we have a hadith that tell us that for people who are concerned about building themselves, about self-building, about preparing themselves, about getting ready for the imam, about the wilaya of God entering into their hearts, they say one of the steps we have to do in order to get closer to God is to abandon mira when kunta muhakkan. What is mira? Sometimes we're having a discussion. Mira is this, that even once truth has been made clear for the other person, I'm still insisting on my point. I want to win the argument. I want to win the argument. It's not that. Like one time I'm just talking, you and I just want to make sure that you understood what I have to say. You accept it, you don't accept it, that's it, that's okay. Another time, no, I want to make sure you say it. Accept the wilayat of Ali ibn Abi Talib. Right now, for me, in front of me. Another time, no, My concern is simply that you know what the truth is.
After that, you know what the truth is?
It's okay, I can leave it.
I leave mira.
So it's not that we say everything that we know. It's not that we... There are some exceptions, though, brothers and sisters. We'll keep this in mind. Sometimes, in a one-on-one discussion, I don't care if the other person wins or loses, right? It's not about me. It's not about my nafs. It's not about proving my point, shutting the other person up. That's not my concern. The other truth has become clear. The other person thinks they won the argument. Alhamdulillah. I walk away. There's another time, though, that there's others listening too. If I don't provide this person with an answer, others will be misguided. So I'm not just fighting for myself or trying to, I just want to make sure that these other people have also understood what the truth is. Then it's enough. So we're told in the hadith not to just speak like that. So these people, those people who are siddiq, these are wonderful, wonderful individuals. Let me read you a verse about their station. We hope that we are with them on the day of judgment. So Surah 57 and verse number 19. وَالَّذِينَ آمَنُوا بِاللَّهِ وَرُسُلِهِ أُولَٰئِكَ هُمُ الصِّدِّيقُونَ وَالشُّهَدَاءُ عِنْدَ رَبِّهِمْ لَهُمْ أَجْرُهُمْ وَنُورُهُمْ. Actually, this verse, Allama Tabatabai, is saying that one of the things that's being referred to in this verse are the mu'minun, the believers, not those people who are actually siddiqun. In this particular surah, he says that these people, they say, لَهُمْ نُورُهُمْ وَأَجْرُهُمْ, in this particular verse. They have their light. They have their reward. They're not at that stage of being the actual siddiqun and shuhada. So we want to be with them, inshallah. We'll move on to our verse. So, أَفْتِنَا فِي سَبْعِ بَقَرَاتٍ سِمَانٍ يَأْكُلُهُنَّ سَبْعٌ إِجَافٌ وَسَبْعِ سُنْبُلَاتٍ خُضْرٍ وَأُخَرَ يَابِسَاتٍ. So now the prisoner speaking to Yusuf again. Give us your opinion concerning those seven fat cows and those seven lean ones that were eaten and eating those fat ones, and the seven green ones and the several others that were dry. So here again, he hasn't mentioned that it was a dream that I saw. But normally the conversations that he would have with Yusuf would be about dreams. And when he says later that give us your opinion, aftina, that means that this is a dream which has been seen. We need your interpretation of it. So he also says something else. He says, لَعَلِّي أَرْجُعُ إِلَى النَّاسِ لَعَلَّهُمْ يَعْلَمُونَ. Maybe after that I will return to the people and they will know. Now, there's some points that Allama Tabatabai tells us about this. He says that one of the things is this. Sallu ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. The hope is that these other individuals will hear the interpretation of the dream and they will get some guidance. They'll come out of ignorance. The man who's doing this doesn't want to go back empty-handed. He's hopeful that I will be able to get the correct information about this and pass it on to the others. He's not asking for himself either, that I want to know. Rather, the group wants to know. The king and his people want to know. So I got to make sure that that happens. Perhaps he was thinking of this as a way of Yusuf getting out of prison. Perhaps. Go over and I'll go and meet my friend Yusuf. I'll come up with the answer to this wonderful dream. Maybe it can be a stepping stone. But the answer wasn't for him personally. That's why when he speaks, he says that, aftina, tell us, right? And then after that, Yusuf, when he addresses him, he says, you, in the plural sense, right? Qala tazra'una. You, in the plural sense, you will sow sab'i sinin da'aba. So Yusuf answers it in the plural sense because it's a group of people who want to know. And he's also not asking for himself, but rather for the community. And Allah said, as he said in the verse, that he's going to go back to the people. Now, who are those people? Here there's two possibilities that Allama Tabatabai discussed. he says that there's some indication that we can get from this verse that the other people are waiting anxiously to see what the answer is. They're anxiously waiting to see what the answer is. Now what happens is two possibilities. When they say the people, perhaps it's the king and his inner circle. Right? They're the people who are the awliya of the people. They have the affairs of the people in their hands. They're controlling things. So if they're confused and uninformed about an issue, it's like everyone is confused and uninformed about an issue. When he says that, I'll go back to Anas, it's only those government officials who are in the problem, but their problems are problems that everybody else has, right? That's one possibility. And one reminder for ourselves also, that the issue of leadership of the community, imama, who's the imam, who's the leader, who's the khalifa, is a very fundamental and important issue. We learn from the Islamic teachings that all wickedness starts from improper leadership. The sins that are committed by the politicians and the leaders and the rulers are sins that little people can never commit. The amount of wickedness and wrong and lack of taqwa that's shown by the leadership of a community, when it's in the wrong hands, it's not even possible to be committed by the smaller people. And it affects everyone else too. That people are on the religion of their rulers. If any of us, brothers and sisters, ever have a position with other mu'mineen, that others look to us for instructions when it comes to Islamic things, you and I want to be really careful about our behavior. So there's no trickle-down effect in the wrong way. If our behavior is something which is good and Islamic and righteous and based on principles, alhamdulillah, can have a very good effect. But if it's wrong, then that trickle-down effect can be there. And we want to be real careful about that. On the other hand, righteous leadership is the source of all goodness. So wicked leadership is the source of all wickedness, but righteous leadership, which is what we're working to establish on the face of the earth, is a source of all goodness. All of the fada'il will come out of having correct leadership for human beings. So their confusion, one possibility regarding this statement is that the confusion that those leaders were facing, he says that I want to go back to the people, la'alli arji'u ila an-nas, I want to go back to the people, la'allahum ya'lamun, maybe they will know, is because their lack of knowledge on this issue, not knowing what to do, being in a state where they were bewildered and confused, reflects on all of the other people. Allama Tawatawai gives another possibility. Ridwanullah Ta'ala alayhi. He says another possibility also. He says that no, what happens is that there was a tight relationship between the king and the people. An-nas here refers to the masses. Perhaps it had gotten out that the king had had such a dream. And the people know that normally a king thinks about his subjects, and you see a lot of times the things that you're concerned about in your dream. So if he's seen that dream and he's concerned about us as the people, then that's a reflection of what's going to happen to us. Let's find out what that king was dreaming about. The people need to know. The masses are concerned. So it's about their own future. The king, if he was worrying, he's worrying about their future. That dream is somehow perhaps related to their future, and the people are waiting for that. Now, let me read the verse one time over, and then let's look for some inspiration in the verse. So Yusuf, Ayyuhas Siddiq, Yusuf, very truthful person, who, as I said, he addresses him as being a Siddiq, as having that high spiritual status, and Allah doesn't reject that. Allah accepts that. Tell us about this dream. These fat cows, eating the other cows. And one thing, beautiful thing that we can get from this verse is that Yusuf alayhi salam is someone who's so wonderful in his akhlaq that the prisoner who abandoned him for 7 years and left him to rot and now needs a favor from him feels so comfortable to go to Yusuf alayhi salam and ask for help. Think about it.
If I had a friend who left me high and dry for 7 years when I needed them, and then that person still felt, no, this person's character is so wonderful. As a servant, I can make a bold statement in the house of the king, telling them that there is a wonderful person. This person can give you the answer to the issues that you're facing. Just give me a chance, and I go and I take this mission on myself. And I have so much confidence this person will still do the right thing, even though I've left them for 7 years. Because now we're looking now on ourselves, right? We want to see how we can use this to improve ourselves. There's one of the wonderful traits of the muttaqin that Amir al-Mu'mineen discusses. Okay? Let me mention that trait and we'll see how it applies here. So Yusuf alayhi salam is someone who, this individual is so confident in his character and his expertise, even though I've done wrong by him, I neglected him, I forgot, I left him for 7 years, even though I had become in this position of power, I can go back to him without any sort of worry and just address Yusuf openly, get to the core of the matter, we need some information from you, and not even concerned that Yusuf's not going to give it to me. What's the trait though? This is the trait. وَشُرُورُهُمْ مَأْمُونَةٌ. When it talks about the muttaqeen, that one of the things about the muttaqeen is this, that the muttaqeen, or people, are safe from the pious people harming them. The shurur and the wickedness, badness that might come from one of the people who has taqwa, no, people are safe from that. Other people feel safe around the pious people. I may have done wrong to him or her. Am I concerned that they're going to take vengeance on me? Not out of weakness, not because I'm not strong, but am I the person who's, or I'm the kind of person, no, people know that when they're around me, they're safe with me. So, some people are not like this. It's a tough hadith now. There are some people who are feared. And because they're feared, they're respected. Because I will tell you off. I will give it to you with both barrels. If you get on my wrong side, there will be hell to pay. So therefore, I respect you. I treat you with honor. Anybody comes into the room, I stand up. But why? Because of their shar. I'm going to read you the hadith. Inshallah, we're not like this. And if we are like this, we ask Allah, this is the month of Ramadan, the month for Tawbah. Inshallah, we're not like this. Other people always on guard around us because we'll give it to them with both barrels. Ready for the hadith? It's from the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad. He says, "Inna sharran nas." So the worst people, "Inna sharran nas 'indallah yawm al-qiyamah," the worst of the people on the day of judgment is who? "Man yukram," the person who's honored. People see this person, respect for this person, stand up for this person, listen to this person. Yukram, honored. Why? Ittaqa'a sharrih. I don't want this person. I know what they're like. God forbid, sometimes in a family it can be like that. There can be a husband or a wife or a brother or a sister. And I'm in the family and other people treat me well. But why do they treat me well? Why don't they mistreat me? Because I am hell on wheels. Is that why? Sometimes it's the mom. Be a mother in the household. And in the household, so quick to start screaming and shouting and throwing a fit. Sometimes it's the dad. There's some fathers. Everybody has respect for them. Everybody listens. When daddy comes home, everybody, right? But people walk on eggshells around this person. Yukram! But why? Ittaqa'a sharrih. We don't want to be like that. We want to be like those people. Amir al-Mu'mineen is saying that, no, people are safe from harm for them. Does it mean I don't do amr bil ma'ruf and nahi anil munkar? No. Does it mean if somebody tries to tread on my rights, that I don't speak up, give gentle reminders, explain, to keep people from oppressing me. No, I do those things. But people are safe from me doing wickedness to them, that I will get vengeance when I get the chance. Yusuf alayhi salam, think about it. He comes after 7 years to ask you for help. He's put his own neck on the line by telling them, I can solve this. This is an issue the heavyweight in the king's courtyard can't solve. And now he's coming to you. And Yusuf alayhi salam, you'll see in the next verse, inshallah, we'll read it, without saying anything, without Yusuf saying, what have you done? Where have you been the last 7 years? Now you need me? Nothing. So to be like that, people are safe from harm from me. I'm not going to do wickedness to them. They don't honor me out of fear of me. I want to give you one true story to explain that this is not something, a fable in the past. These Quranic values, these are things that we should be aspiring towards. First to me, and then all of you, things that we should be aspiring towards, and things that are perfectly something that we're capable of. One of the shuhada, his name was Muhammad Burunjordi. And Muhammad was a very brave guy, Muhammad. Very brave. To the extent, they said, one time before the Islamic Republic, before the victory in Iran became victorious, this guy, he said, there was one of the members of the Savak. So the internal intelligence inside the country, who were terrible people, would torture people. One of these guys had done something really wicked and had to be killed. He goes over to his friend. He says that, can I borrow your gun? And the guy says, my gun? What do you need my gun for? He says that, I've got this guy with Savak. I've got to take care of him. He said, I'm not going to give you my gun. He said, why won't you give it to me? He said, because you'll go with my gun. You'll try and carry that out. The gun will jam on you. It'll give you problems. You won't be able to do it. Muhammad said, give me the gun. I'll take care of the rest. Muhammad was a tough guy. Give me the gun, I'll take care of the rest. Muhammad went, and he sees Muhammad after a couple of days. What happened, Muhammad? He says that, I saw the Savaki guy. What happened? He said, I tried to take out the gun, and you're right, it did jam on me. He tried to draw his gun. Then what happened? Then I took out the pistol, and I beat him to death with the pistol. So Muhammad a weakling? Muhammad's not a weak. This is before the victory of the revolution. Okay? So this same Muhammad was now the head of an important part of the Revolutionary Guards. And they said that one time he was driving back from his city, and when he was driving from his city, there were two other cars, or he was driving from a city with several of his friends, and there was another person who was trying to pass, a truck driver. And he kept trying to pass, and the street didn't allow for that. So Muhammad's trying to pull over so the other guy can get past, but it's not happening. And the truck driver is getting more and more angry, flashing the lights, get out of the way, and he's trying. He's moving off the side of the road, trying. He can't get past. Finally, the truck driver's away. He pulls over, and he lets the truck driver go past. Driving down the road, the truck driver slams on the brakes. So he has to stop the car just to keep it from crashing into this individual. Slams on the brakes. He comes back out of the car, the truck driver. Handlebar mustache, one of these big mustaches, comes over to him, opens the door, slaps Muhammad. Muhammad's who? Muhammad was brave before he became part of the Revolutionary Guard. Now he's in charge of an important section there, the general in an area, the head, the commander in an area, and he's got other people from the Revolutionary Guard with him, but they're all dressed in civilian clothes. Smacks him, swears at him. The other guy, you know who you're smacking? The other guy says, get out the car and handle their business. He says, no, relax. He says, my fault. I'm sorry, we were wrong, forgive us. The guy goes over, gets back in his, grumbling, gets back in his truck, goes and drives. Other guys who said that we were in there in the car, so upset. How could this happen? Slapped the command. He swore at him. He didn't do anything wrong. furious. They end up going back to the base. So he's there and he's in the base, and now he's in the base. And then the phone's ringing, there's a problem outside, commotion outside. What's happening? He said, there's a truck driver here. The truck driver wants to make a delivery early. The rules are that he can't do that. He's making a lot of commotion. Send him into my office. He comes into the office. It's the same guy. When the guy walks into the office, right, grumbling, making noise, he goes in. Now the head, the commander of the Revolutionary Guards is sitting here. That same youth I just smacked around, the same youth who's dangerous on a street at night. He said, oh, you're still causing problems? What's the problem? What's the issue? The guy, he said, well, look, I really wanted to deliver. I had a load of things to deliver. I want to deliver it. I want to go back home. Picks up the phone. Take his delivery immediately. He says, Bismillah, go ahead and go. The guy, so ashamed. I smacked him. He's the head. He could have done anything at that time. Tears come down from the guy's face, goes over and embraces him. Okay? Shururuhum ma'amuna. That the believers are people. Their wickedness, no, you don't have to be. They're not going to harm you. Not go out of their way to do something wrong to you. Yusuf alayhi salam, after 7 years in prison, still nothing but naf'a and care and khair for others. We ask Allah by the right of Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad that we are able to be those true soldiers of Imam al-Mahdi. We ask Allah by the right of Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad that he protect all of the mu'mineen, mu'minat, maraja, and especially the leader. Sallu ala Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad.